with their own conscience for the rest of their lives. So Socrates sort of summed it up. And to the very end of life, he's learned, studied, thought, and served according to his principles. It actually, Socrates was not sentenced to death. People don't mostly know this, but it's true. He was not. He was sentenced to pay a small fine because he was found guilty of a minor offense. Plato offered to pay the fine immediately, and Socrates said no. He said, I am not paying the fine because I am not guilty, and I am not going to buy freedom by perjuring myself. So he died rather than pay a small fine and admit a fault that he did not believe that he possessed. So the problem of what happens if we do have life after death, which most people now are beginning to think is pretty likely, and we begin to think about it, we know that the better we are equipped to go on, the better the world is going to be and the better we are going to be. The more a nation gains in a philosophy of life through constructive experience, the longer that nation will exist. And when it does fail, it will become a memory that is eternal for good in the society and world to which it has belonged. Therefore, in our own cases, every example of the integrities we believe become part of a peer group that knows that these things are important, and they become inspiration to others who might otherwise have no thoughts of the matter. Actually, also, assuming that we do have a returning life, then we must come back to something. If we live a life beyond this one, there's only one reason why we should live it. And that is, there's still more to learn. We haven't learned it all, or we wouldn't come back. And because we haven't learned it all, we do come back. And we do come back to face problems we've never solved. So every life includes within itself a number of unsolved problems, and these are the things that are most annoying most people. So the more problems you solve this time, the fewer you'll have to face some other time. If you've gotten over a bad disposition in this life, you don't have to live with it in the next one. If you have served generously and kindly and lovingly in this life, you may expect such services will be your reward. When they happen, you won't remember that you deserved them, but they will happen because you as a human being have earned them, whether you're conscious of it or not. If, on the other hand, you go on being selfish and self-centered and indifferent to values, you return to a world which you will brand as selfish and inconsiderate because it is simply returning to you that which you put in yourself. It is very important, then, from any standpoint, now, later, or before now, that each person develop as many of the virtues of living as possible. That every time a situation arises that calls for a decision, that we should make one as wisely as we can. We can no longer live by a philosophy, I don't want to, and I'm not going to. This is the philosophy that governs many people, and it has absolutely no basic value. Instead of that, we are going to try, in every decision, to make one as constructive as possible. We are not going to try to avoid. We are not going to try to cheat a few dollars out of the orphan and the widow. We are going to do the things that are going to make life richer here and now. We are not going to want to look back even in our own years to nothing but mistakes or short-term activities. We want to look upon life as a single great career made up of all the incidents of daily existence. We're going to want to look back upon our life as we would upon a distinguished or at least honorable bibliography. We are going to want to be able to feel that all the way along the line we have learned something, that we've done something worthwhile, and that we have served in some way to make a better world. Most people are not much interested in a better world. Some of them will say now, and I've heard it recently, why make a better world? There won't be any. Nuclear problems will take care of that. Actually, we don't know this. We are not at all sure that the nuclear holocaust will ever actually come. We can hope that in spite of our various delinquencies, we're not quite that foolish. But even if we should pass through this, let us realize that the part of us that is eternal is not going to cease. We are not going to lose existence because of any disaster in this world. The only thing that can destroy our futures is the disasters we make inside ourselves. And these are the things that we have to constantly think about. I think I've told you before that world end scares are not particularly rare. There was a bad one in New England during the lifetime of Ralph Waldo Emerson. The prophets, religiously oriented, announced that doom was at hand, that all was lost, that the great rule of the Antichrist had come, and they were all going to be wiped out. So these trusting people, believing this, made a curious decision. They sold all their properties and worldly goods, and when the day came, sat on the curb with the money in both hands. The world ended, they'd at least have the money to the last conceivable moment. Of course, nothing happened. And they probably had the bad karma of having to buy back their own homes at a slightly higher rate. Someone whacked on Emerson on that morning and said, "Dr. Emerson, if the world should end, what are you going to do?" And Emerson was a very quiet man. He thought for a while. He said, "Well, if it ends, I guess I'll have to get along without it." And that is the way it is with most of these problems. And I think we should realize that almost certainly we're going to have to get along with what happens. But if we are right inside, we can handle it when it comes. And if we are right enough inside, it won't come at all. It all depends on what we do. And this, in turn, depends upon a long, close, friendly acquaintance with ourselves. We've got to really know a little bit about what we are and why we're here and what we look like to somebody else when we walk by them. We have to understand life in an entirely different way. We have had many races upon this planet which have disappeared. And the records and annals and recordings of all of these civilizations are somewhere locked inside of ourselves. The continents of the past are gone. The Medes and the Persians of antiquity have ceased to exist. But all of these, every stranger, every ancient time, every hero, every slave of the past lives in us. We are the past. We are standing at this moment on the crest of ourselves. What we have been, how we got there, how we felt about everything along the way. If we were chronic campaigners for 50 or 100 incarnations, we will still be. If everything looks terrible now, it's because we always looked at it that way some time ago. It is far more important and significant and valuable to realize that each day the individual has the right to surmount the negativeness which he has brought with him from hundreds of lives. He has an opportunity to be bigger before he leaves here than he was before he got here. He has the right to make the changes in himself which he can mentally assume these changes would have changed history had they been made before. He can't grow until he knows he can grow, except by experience and pain. But when he grows properly by the effort of his own consciousness, most of the pain is gone, and the growth is real and enduring. But if we continue to live all through business and retirement with little purposes, little attitudes, little fusses, little misunderstandings, we will have them into the next embodiment. Now, of course, in this situation, we find a certain disagreement among some people. The people say, why should we be victimized by others? Why should we have to have good dispositions when other people do what they please? Well, the other people do what they please, and they get what they deserve. If we have good dispositions, we do as we please, and we get what we deserve. It all depends on what we invest, what we take out. And the great investment of our generation and all generations is a solid investment in personal integrity. Now, how do we do this? Most people are not heroic, and when they're tired out of 40 or 50 years of grind and are disillusioned by the political situations that arise, by the social conditions, and have certain grievances for the times they've been exploited and deceived and injured, and tragedies that have set in, broken homes, wayward children, all these things they look back on and they say to themselves, well, maybe I have to be excused for not being very successful, because it just seems as though nothing was ever in life that did me much good. Well, this, of course, is a perfectly legitimate possibility of attitude. But when we hold it, we should sit down very carefully and say to ourselves, yes, I had a broken home. It was a great tragedy in my life. Now then, start back 5 or 10 years before the home broke and see if you can't find some reason why you at least were partly responsible for it breaking. Can you think back over a situation of that kind and say, if I had taken a different attitude at that moment, if I had forgiven something or overlooked something or forgotten something and risen above some petty disturbance, would I still have had a broken home? Or would I be comparatively happy and the home would be secure if I had done something a little different? We all think of what other people have done to us, but we are a little forgetful of what we have done to them. And in our karmic life, the problems of thinking this through must come by a more or less thoughtful approach to living. A lot of people are not going to have this approach for a long time. But everyone who is interested in growth, interested in spiritual matters, interested in self-improvement, should give a lot of thought to these factors, because they play a very large part in our careers and in the futures we look forward to. I have noticed definitely that people who have forgotten themselves, or who have dedicated their time, even in younger years, to public service or public help, have had a better life and a more secure environment than those with other types of attitudes. It isn't necessary for the person to make some huge sacrifice, but it is necessary to have a good, constructive attitude. If, as a result of 50 years in business, you have come to the conclusion that it is all a crime and should be abolished, that business is a terrible thing, then this is going to work against you as you retire. You're going to retire into a world you don't like and you don't believe in. If, however, you say to yourself, yes, it was a tough job. I had a lot of trouble. I had many things happen that I wish hadn't happened. But out of it all came certain things that were good. And out of all this adversity, I have suddenly discovered the reason for it. And the reason for it is ignorance. The reason for it may also be overambition. It also can be spite or jealousy. And all these emotions, with their current consequences, have to be faced. And it's a wonderful thing to get them out of the way before you go forward into a retirement. Because in a sense, a retirement is a new birth in time. The individual is born again. Any time that he changes his position in life, changes his viewpoints, changes his attitudes and his interests. So the individual who retires is born into the world of retirement. He is no longer part of a world of these complex situations that he fought for so many years. Of course, he may still have some of them hanging on if he was unable to clear the slate. But in any event, it is a new birth. And a new birth is a new opportunity. It's a new opportunity to think back upon your own mistakes and stop regretting and learn to understand. I know a lot of older people who sit around largely telling about the problems of their own lives. They get into a competitive distressfulness. Each one outdoes the other in expressing their misfortunes lengthily and repeatedly. This does no good, but there's always someone who will top it no matter what you say. But if instead of this, the individual can literally look back and learn what he has gained from these experiences. Instead of wanting sympathy, he should be asked the simple question, what did you gain from this? Don't tell me of all the miseries you went through, but what did you learn that helped to make you a better person? Tell me that and share it with me. I probably need it too. But if we don't take this kind of attitude, retirement somehow doesn't quite work as it should. Now, most people feel that retirement brings with it a gradual limitation of opportunity for self-expression. In the first 5 or 10 years of retirement, the person may live just about the way he always lived and may feel about the same. But in 15 or 20 years of retirement, he suddenly discovers the real encroachment of age. He is not able to do the things that he wanted to do. He is no longer able, in other words, to keep so busy that he doesn't have to think. If he has enough outside activities, he can block out the contemplation of his own existence. But when he reaches a point where he has to live more and more by himself and with himself, he may have friends, he's not going to be necessarily lonely, but he's not going to be able to run away so fast because his legs aren't working that fast anymore. He has to live more and more in the small world of himself. Now, the larger he can make that world before the time comes, the better off he is. If he can make a world in which he can look back upon all the interesting things that he's done, and receives quite frequently a card of appreciation or gratitude for someone he helped, if he can remember how he learned and what he learned, and if he can have a feeling that he has put his own life in order, and he can live with himself and continue to learn through the contemplation of his own conduct. He also will probably have certain outlets. He will be able to read, he'll be able to study, he'll be able to listen and enjoy many things, but he can't quite run away from his own life as he did shortly after his retirement. He has to become more and more aware that he is moving towards a major change, and that this major change is not a disaster, but a fulfillment. That it is the indication that he is going to have a new start, but he will still remember what he knew. His next level of life will be the sum of his present level and what he has learned from it. If he hasn't learned anything from it, he'll have to have the same level again some other time. But anything he learns, he doesn't have to go through twice. No one is punished twice for the same crime. It is against the law, not only the law of man, but the law of God. He will never be deceived in the same way unless he is willing to accept deceit in the same way. He will never lose a friend again because he will not do the thing that cost him a friend in the past. Little by little, he puts his life in order and gets to be very comfortable and happy about these problems. Also, in those older years, there comes a greater need, a greater personal need for religious insight. He will have to begin to measure the quality of his religion. He will have to realize that he is a creature, a divine being in a divine universe. That no matter where he goes or when he goes, he's part of a plan that is eternal. A great many human beings have created religions that are too small for this. They have created theologies that are burdensome and fretful. They have also variously injured, afflicted, and persecuted each other in the name of God. The older person thinking these things through will realize how impossible such concepts are. There is no reason to assume that any time that the deity which is responsible for the creation of existence created something to hate it, something to hurt, something to destroy, something ignorant would be damned for his ignorance. These things just don't happen. The world we live in is a good world, and this power that God's things is a parent, not a despot. And the only reason why we have experiences is because it's for our own good. That from these experiences we learn to understand ourselves, our world, and the God that fashioned it. All these things come quietly to the person who is thoughtful. No fear has to remain. Because in a universe created by an eternal principle of good, there is no real cause for fear. It is because of fear that we hurt each other. But it's because we do it, not because universal law required it. Learn of universal law requires that each of us in his own turn shall come to the full expression and full realization of the eternal good of which he is a part. There's no reason why he should think any other way. And in the quietude of an afternoon, sitting on the porch of his little house, or some place where he likes to walk, the thoughtful person walks always with truth, walks always with God. And the little of the God in him helps him to find the God around him and in all the other things with which he comes in contact. The good person, who may have been critical in his youth, is thoughtful, unselfish, and kind as the years close in. He has been given another reason why this is easy, namely because he doesn't have to fight the fight that he has retired from. He doesn't have to hold the attitudes that he felt were necessary when he was out as a wage-earner. He can now not be jealous of anyone because no one is hurting him anymore. He does not need to envy the person who has more because he realizes that he has as much as he can take with him, and that is very little. He doesn't have to fight. He doesn't have to defend himself. He doesn't have to argue with people. He doesn't even have to doubt his own children or grandchildren. He's part of a life which he is gradually beginning to understand. And it is the person who understands the goodness of life who advances into older years with the greatest amount of peace, understanding, and contentment. And then not only the psychiatrist in this case, but also the family physician has things to say about these matters. It has been proven beyond any question of doubt that a negative thinker is more subject to sickness than a positive thinker. An individual who is sorry for himself is more likely to become rheumatic or to develop various complaints and disturbances. According to physiognomy and old Dr. Fowler, who had the phrenology concession on the Coney Island ferry, there is something to be said about all the attitudes of people. The attitudes of individuals are very carefully classified in physiognomy and phrenology, and a certain attitude depresses the circulation of the body in a certain way. Some wrong attitudes hit the stomach head on, and from that time this gives trouble for the rest of life. And if you keep it on long enough and worry long enough and get nervous long enough and nurse grievances long enough, you're apt to have ulcers. And that's more or less a poetic justice. You couldn't expect anything else. How can you expect to do wrong and be right? Another type of problem comes along and your liver gets a head-on collision with it. And little by little, every negative attitude we have reacts into the physical body. For organs are instruments which not only are tied into a pattern, the organs of the body correspond exactly with the parts of the brain. And every organ of the body has a polarity in the brain. And when the brain gets unpleasant in that area, the body begins to suffer. The individual who lives right, makes a good clean job of it, can expect much better physical condition. He will not be subject to so many ailments. He will not be so frightened of life. And he will go on doing the things that he thinks are interesting as long as he can. And sometimes he can do it quite a long time if his attitudes are right. But the fretful, revengeful person who hates society or is always complaining about what politics are doing or what business is doing and loves to hunt up a book that exposes somebody, this type of individual isn't going to have good health because he hasn't got a good mind. Now, no one can stop him from doing what he's doing, but he has to be prepared for the consequences. And up to now, the world in general has never recognized these consequences as being related to their own attitudes toward life. Friendliness makes friends. Jealousy makes enemies. The individual just simply cannot live and compromise his integrities without loss to himself. So the more his life has been unreasonable, the more problem he's going to have with his health later on. Actually, it is proven again and again that even diseases such as cancer, diabetes, and things of this nature are chronic ailments largely resulting from chronic attitudes. The person who for 10 or 15 years holds a bad mood is going to have physical consequences. And after living a very selfish, self-centered, and dogmatic life, the individual enters into retirement with a body that is already afflicted by these attitudes. Now, it may be that if he's very wise and very careful and changes his attitudes, that he can neutralize a lot of the troubles he's caused himself. But if he continues on with the same attitudes, his aches and pains will continue. And this is something he doesn't want to really believe. He doesn't want to go on believing that his retirement is going to be fretful, and he doesn't feel the fact he's been fretful all his life should have any bearing on it. But it does. So the best thing to do is lose all such attitudes. The best thing to do is get over every animosity and antagonism that you have ever nourished. At any age, because if you don't get over it and it becomes habit-forming, if it becomes an addiction like a drug, this attitude can be the destruction of you in the long run. We are not presumed to have defense for our mistakes. We are rather given the judgment to get over them and to rise above any feeling that is unworthy of a human being. The fact that we have them in secret, therefore, and nobody finds it out, is no help. Because we can't keep our attitudes from our own bodies. We can't keep them from our own brain. We can't keep them from the pulsing beat of our hearts. These things are recorded. And there is simply no way of getting out of this kind of a situation. It has been proven definitely that a temper fit will wreck blood pressure. It'd be very serious. No, it doesn't last long. You get mad. Blood pressure goes up 20 degrees. An hour or two later, you're sorry, the blood pressure drops again. But this is shock. Every time a dispositional shock affects us, an organ or a function is damaged. It is irritated. It is hurt. It is in some way affected unpleasantly. And what a disease is to the body, an attitude is to the inner functions of life. Body is not only a mass of material, it is function. And this function can be deranged by attitude. Jealousy can affect the liver and the kidneys, seriously. And short-sightedness of attitudes can affect the eyes. All kinds of things, blood poison, all types of rheumatic ailments, are made worse by negative appropriate attitudes which are consistent with the ailment itself. So when we go to retirement, we have to take the consequence of the intentional damage that we have done to ourselves. We won't say that it was intentional damage. We will say that it was something we did not know better about. And yet, it's a funny, interesting thing. The Bible, which is a very sacred book to a great many people, is in many instances one of the best sources for information about the consequences of conduct. The Bible proves conclusively in many of its statements the importance of a simple, constructive life. It is better for your physical health to forgive your enemy than to revenge yourself upon him. It is better for your own health to give than to receive. It is better for your digestion that you permit old grievances to fade away. Now, when you're busy all the time, the body is reasonably strong, it fights against the damage you do to it. And up to a certain period of life, you don't notice these things. You think the body is taking the beating rather well. And if it doesn't do so well, you can always have a bypass or something and get away with it. Why have a bypass when you would not have nearly have as much chance of it if you constantly guard your conduct? Now, there's no question in the world that for many people it's too late to prevent some of the damage. In fact, they don't even know that they've done anything wrong. And there's no use bothering them or trying to hurt them or make life more difficult for them. The main thing is to realize that somewhere in the pattern of things, there is a rule that when we learn it, can do a great deal to lengthen life. In alchemy, we have the same thinking. The mysterious elixir of life is symbolized in the ancient alchemical writings, or at least in some of them, very dramatically, by the fact of resurrection. The philosopher's stone is represented by Christ raising himself from the dead. Wisdom, beauty, love, and truth are instruments of resurrection. Evils are transmuted by virtues. All hatreds and all discords are transmuted by simple, honest love. And in all of our problems as we advance in years, the love we have given will be found in the health and happiness of retirement. The loves we have denied will be denied to us. The kindnesses we have done will return to us. The self-centeredness and selfishness will return in the form of loneliness and more or less self-pity. So it's perfectly possible to make a good retirement, but you should really start it to be really optimistic the day you're born. Now, you'll probably be a little young to understand the point at that time, but then Comenius, the great educator, pointed it out. And that is, he says that the essential education of the human being is found in the mother school. The child's future, including his life and for practical purposes, his retirement, it will be taught to him at his mother's knee. It will be taught before he ever goes to school. The school may show him how to die with courage. But the mother school, what he learns in his infancy by example and by instruction, will later shine out through his retirement years and bestow the blessing of a larger life. So we will gain most by the simple learning of the values of the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount. And if we live these in gentle sincerity through the years of life, we will have very few people who will not have a pleasant retirement, a useful one, in which growth, service to others, improvement of self, constant dedication to the final achievement of the divine purpose will not only help us, but as it gets more general, will probably bring the peace to the world that we're all so hopeful for. So if you want that good retirement, start now. Thank you very much.